This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Environmental scientists from around the world are coming to NC State to discuss climate change and its impact on agriculture. The French Embassy is holding several regional talks in America and Canada before December's UN Climate Change Conference in Paris. There's one tonight in Raleigh. It's called Climate Smart Agriculture, Innovation and Resiliency. The panel explores agricultural risk management and the economic impact of climate change to North Carolina and the Southeast. I'm joined by three of the panelists today. We're going to start with Ryan Boyles, who's a professor and climatologist at NC State. Hello, Ryan. Good to talk with you.
I'm glad to be here.
Your experience is in climate and weather and the changes that are taking place. What are you going to talk about tonight?
We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about climate's impacts to agriculture in North Carolina and how we see that changing, and hopefully spend some time talking about why we think North Carolina is in a good position to really be a leader for the rest of the nation.
Resilience is in the title, so it suggests that there may not be as much we can do about stopping climate change. So if it's coming, kind of what do we do? Is that the idea? How does agriculture adjust to the inevitable changes that we're going to see in climate?
Exactly. Whether it's heavy rainfall or drought or temperatures and all the other pests that are associated with those conditions, we've learned a lot in North Carolina about how to adapt to those, and we're going to spend some time talking about that.
What do we know?
Well, we know, for example, that we've had a lot of drought in the past 15 years, and we've learned a lot about how to deal with that for water management, making sure that we use the water efficiently, build organic matter in our soils to get good yields out of our crops without needing a lot of extra water. We've learned how to choose the best varieties to manage for extreme temperatures, and we've diversified. We have a lot of different varieties of crops that allow us to take advantage of the different varieties of climate that we have here.
So can all of those adjustments and changes and new technology and crop science, does that mean that we don't have to worry so much about climate change? We can fix it.
Well, it probably depends on the types of crops that you're growing and the types of markets that you're trying to reach out to. If you're thinking about annual row crops, cotton, corn, you know, those are things you plant every year, maybe you're a little less sensitive. But if you're putting in a vineyard or you're thinking about fruit crops and orchards, those are changes. You're going to feel the changes over the coming decades from climate. So you need to be thinking about what that climate's going to be 20 years from now.
And when we talk about sort of climate change, warmer temperatures, drought, it's pretty easy to figure out. Not as much water. Well, crops need water. That's bad. But really, there's a kind of step-by-step sort of ecological big picture. What happens when it's warmer in terms of pests and all of that? Can you give us the kind of the big ecological picture or larger picture of what all this means to agriculture?
Well, in many ways, it's a complex system. But broadly, we can say things like, it's been warm, it's going to keep getting warmer. And we understand that then the types of pests and other pressures that we get from areas further south, those are likely going to be ones that start emerging earlier further north here in North Carolina. So looking southward is a good indicator of some of the things we may look at and what we can experience in the future.
All right. So we're talking about agriculture, resilience in North Carolina, making adjustments to climate change. But, of course, North Carolina has another stake in climate change, and that is its coasts. And for that, I'll bring Virginia Burkett into the conversation. She can give us a national perspective. Virginia is the chief scientist for climate and land use change at the U.S. Geological Survey. Her research centers on climate change and sea level rise. Virginia, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
You handed me a map here, the North Carolina coast, and projected how much of this coast is going to be underwater over the next several decades as a result of climate change. Can you give us a sense of where we're headed?
Well, we know from the past record that sea level has already risen about 8 inches globally since 1880 and is projected to rise another 1 to 4 feet through the end of this century. So the map that you're seeing there just shows the area of coastal North Carolina that is vulnerable to just roughly 3 foot rise in sea level.
3 foot rises, which is something we're expecting over the next century. So give us a sense of I'm looking at this, but it doesn't have all the handy names on it that I can identify
right.
The places. What's going to happen to the coast?
Well, some parts of the coast are more vulnerable than others. There's more land subsidence north of Cape Lookout, and so that is the area that is sinking relative to mean sea level. So the rate of wetland loss and barrier island erosion rates will be higher in that area due to the natural geologic processes and the geologic setting there combined with that global mean sea level. And even if just a 1 foot rise above today's high tide. One recent study shows us about 260 miles of local roads in North Carolina. 120 miles of North Carolina state roads, 7 public safety facilities, 24 wastewater sites. A lot of inundation is expected, and of course, the higher the rate of sea level, the more extensive the damage will be.
Right, it's a dynamic process. It's not just that more water comes in, but at the same time, as you say, there's some of that land is sinking, which makes
right.
the sense of the feel of inundation worse. You're going down as the water goes up. And coastal erosion as well, which has an impact.
Right, which reduces the natural buffer that protects coastal communities, coastal refuges that are in that particular area of North Carolina. So as you lose your coastal landforms, it exposes your cities and your agriculture and your forests to more frequent inundation during storms and even just during regular high tide.
And talk about those storms, Ryan, because we're seeing more and more violent storms that are having an impact on the landscape as well, right?
Right, and this isn't too new to North Carolina. We've had big storms in the past, and we'll keep having them. The science that's coming out suggests that we may see less frequent types of these storms, but when they occur, they're going to be more powerful. So maybe fewer total number of hurricanes that happen in any given year, but with the ones that are able to get organized are going to be very intense, more of those Category 3, Category 4, Category 5 storms because the ocean's so much warmer.
And again, that leads to more intrusion. You talk about something called saltwater intrusion. Mm-hmm. Explain what that is and what impact that
will have. Well, as this mean sea level rises, the intrusion due to just tidal forcing and winds will get salt water further and further into your freshwater areas, contaminating water used for agriculture, changing the salinity of estuaries and wetlands and that sort of thing. But Dr. Boyle's brought up this trend. It's not just a projection of the future, but since 1970, there's been an increase in the intensity of these higher category storms that make landfall in the Atlantic and Gulf Coast. And intensity in terms of frequency, duration, amount of rainfall for those higher category storms. Not more storms,
right.
but an increase in the intensity or destructiveness.
They do that kind of damage. It's permanent damage, and then that intrusion has an impact farther inland. And so is there a way for agriculture to adjust to that sort of thing, more salinity in the groundwater or in the ground around their fields?
In the coastal communities that are already dealing with this, it's a real problem. And there are a variety of strategies that folks are looking at. Not a whole lot of successes that I've heard yet.
Well, let's turn to Europe here. This is an international conference. It's sponsored by the French Embassy. And Olivier Legault joins us now. Olivier is an engineer and researcher at the French National Institute of Agricultural Research. And he is here as part of this conference. Welcome to Durham, first of all. Good to have
you
here. Enjoy the food. You will.
Yeah, I would.
But let me ask you about your research. Give me a sense of what's going on in Europe and France in terms of resilience or making adjustment to what we've already experienced.
So we have the local situations a bit similar to what you just discussed now. And what we are doing at INRA, my research institute, we are working on the food systems globally. So, of course, there are some accidents like floods, etc. But it's not the only thing. We think that our society and our food systems are facing now a major turn for the coming century, and which might become a major wall if we don't take the turn. And so basically the food systems have to face the three or four big challenges. There is only one planet, and we are more and more numerous, and so we have to feed all these people, and at the same time make fiber, make materials, make energy, also with crops. So there's starting to be some competition for the space, for the fields. The nutritional transition. I remember when I was a student, the major problem was undernutrition. And now we have more obese people in the world than undernourished people. So and this is just a symptom of the situation, because of course there is a whole set of things, and of course the climatic transition, and agriculture is heavily impacted by already starts. I mean, it's already something that we're seeing is heavily impacted by the climate change. Climate change is not something like a polar bear somewhere on top of an ice cube. It's not only this. There is this, but it's not only this. It's also here, and it's now. It's up to us to do something. And the second thing that we're working about is how to mitigate climate change, so how to move the different parameters that we can move with agriculture. The major source of agricultural greenhouse gases are cattle breeding with methane, and the soils with nitrous oxide, and then deforestation with which produces carbon dioxide, and these three things are very important.
You, as you pointed out, this is a global problem. That we're talking about global climate change. You talked about global food networks, and yet there are regional differences that will be vastly different over time. So is this a problem that's tackled by international conferences like this, or is it best handled kind of at the regional level where those differences will be experienced in their own unique way?
That's the big problem. It has to be both. It has to be both, and it has to be all types of energies. Then we need more knowledge, so research has something to say. We need more or different political will to take the right decisions, because if we take those decisions a bit later, then it's going to cost a lot. So we need this. And there is to be a conference, a conference of parties of the countries in Paris next fall, next winter. And it's a very important conference where all the countries must take decisions together, because it has to be made in a coordinated manner at the global, at the worldwide level. And it has to be made locally as well, because the solutions will be local anyway. And the business that's going to be created, because there will be business created as well, is going to be local as well.
Well, Ryan, I think that's one of the important factors in this. You know, following the Kyoto Agreement in the 90s, there was a lot of money to be made, and it was made mostly by Europeans because Americans wouldn't sign on to the idea that this was even a problem, in the technology to mitigate the impact of carbon emissions. Are we any better off? I mean, you're at a research facility at NC State. You certainly can see the opportunity to create the technologies that help us going forward. Are we better able to sort of see climate change in that light rather than the kind of political, ideological struggle that has been in this country?
I think so. And another area where I think North Carolina is well positioned because of its research and educational institutions that we have here. There's a lot of talent. There are a lot of folks. There's a lot of business opportunities and a lot of entrepreneurial spirit here, especially in the Triangle, but across the state, where people are looking for those opportunities and can step up. And if there's a market there and there's the will politically, then I think we'll be able to take advantage of it very quickly. We've already seen some of that start to happen in North Carolina. We're now very heavily involved in solar energy. There's a lot of research going on how to make that more efficient. There's a lot going on and a lot to build on. And so these types of opportunities for international collaborations and learn from what others is doing, as well as looking at national perspectives and bringing it to a local scale, this is how we take the step forward.
Virginia Burkett, you know, when you hear about this and think about working globally to find the technological and the political solutions to this problem, are we sort of off the cliff when it comes to this map? What could we do now, or is there anything we could do now that would make this map look different in 100 years?
Oh, yes. Increasing the resilience of coastal ecosystems. I was head of our coastal management program in Louisiana before I became a federal employee, and there are coastal protection strategies that will help combat saltwater intrusion, not dredging canals, for example, that are perpendicular to the shoreline. That would accelerate the intrusion of salt water. There are dozens of approaches to stabilizing coastal ecosystems, increasing their resilience, that can be undertaken wherever you are.
Ryan, you were looking at some of the agricultural strategies. You talked about some of the specifics, using more cover crops, the protecting berries, that kind of thing. Can you give us some more insight into that?
There's a lot of different strategies that are out there. A lot of it comes down to whether or not you have access to water. Irrigation is a great strategy, but of course there's long-term going to be conflicts over how we manage the water and who gets that water. So the water is one of those big areas. And if you can irrigate and get through those dry spells, you can do it. If you can build organic material into your soils, that helps be a reservoir for your soil. And I think we're going to see an increase to more on-farm pond storage for water to get us through those little bits. You know, California right now is dealing with this huge drought. They have all these implications, but they need huge amounts of water because it doesn't rain there at all in the summertime. we just need a few inches of water to get us through those short-term dry spells. And if we can do that, you're going to see a lot of increased agricultural productivity in the Southeast and North Carolina in particular.
Well, and in some ways it points to, I mean, that's an agricultural economy that was based on heavy irrigation, right? You're trying to irrigate a desert. That made sense at a certain point, but one could now look at that and call it short-sighted. So here we are again. Can we take the long view of where we are headed inevitably and take a little brighter view about how we're going to go forward in all that? So there may be a lesson in that. Also, we used to call this global warming. We now call it climate change. And Olivier, you point to some of the changes that could actually make things colder for people in Europe, right?
We don't really call it global warming. It's really climate change, because there's two things going to happen. It's going to warm up globally, and this year was warmer than last. It is warmer than last year so far, and last year was the record that we ever recorded since meteorological station exists. So we are going to beat the record this year, and that's going to increase. And the worst is going to be the storms, the floods, etc. So extreme events, which are going to be more frequent and more dramatic. So, in the forecast that can be made is for Europe, for instance, the climate in Europe is quite mild because of the Gulf Stream, and one of the scenarios of the bad case scenarios, is that the streams in the North Atlantic are going to change, and maybe there is not going to be a Gulf Stream anymore, and so maybe the effect of the global warming would be a local colding somehow in Europe because of that in maybe 50 years, 100 years from now.
It just points to the dramatic changes that can't be sort of scoped linearly in kind of a linear way in the various regions of the country. So it's a complicated system, as you point out. What about, we talked about political will. I mean, Virginia talks about coastal management, sound coastal management practices. Well, there's some political challenges because of the way it might impinge on development in those areas, et cetera. We know we have an ideological struggle over the idea of climate change in this country. What about in Europe and France in particular? Have you experienced those? How have the Europeans moved forward? And they do seem to have less struggle with this idea and finding political ways forward.
Well, first, the pronostic is now shared broadly in Europe and in France especially. We used to have people who were skeptical about the truth of global warming. And we had an event in the beginning of the years 2000, a severe drought in the summer in 2003, with thousands of people who died, and old people usually, and and this made us conscious that wow, something's happening and it's bad, and so now there is not so much of a discussion about the reality of the phenomenon, but now there is a lot of discussions about how to deal with it. So how to mitigate, get to 2 degrees heating of the global temperature. We have so far been 2.5 about degrees Celsius of increased temperature. We want to reach 2 and not more than that, because 2 is going to be dramatic already. Mm-hmm. So how to do this? We have to have a very strong political will. And then how to deal with those 0.5, maybe 2, maybe more degrees of global warming is going to be
inevitable. Even if you take the most dramatic action, there's still a lot to cope with. I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Olivier Legault is an engineer and a researcher at the French National Institute of Agricultural Research. Ryan Boyles is a professor and climatologist at NC State. Virginia Burkett is chief scientist for global change with the U.S. Geological Survey. Thank you all for being on the program.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
There will be tonight's talk at NC State is called Climate Smart Agriculture, Innovation and Resiliency. It's at the Stewart Theater in Talley Student Union at NC State. You can find out more information about this free event at our website, stateofthings.org. This is the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Just ahead, a Vietnamese refugee tells his life story in a one-man play coming to Chapel Hill. Stay with us.